We left off last week. We were talking about the sugya of paleta shechazera, and we basically resolved the whole yisrael that, according to the way we pass in halacha, the paleta shechazera interferes with the kaddish shivnikiyah. Does not cancel entirely the kaddish shivnikiyah, but does interfere in the sense that with any day that a woman is paleta, that's going to pose a problem that cannot count as one of the days of shivnikiyah. So we spoke about what that means for us in terms of calculating days and 4 days and 5 days, and what it means on a normal basis. Then we spoke about some of the bizarre applications of this halacha b'zman hazeh. And then there's one last case that's the, in a sense, the bizarre, but the shaila really happens. It's I'll say a much more modern day technological shaila, but the shaila really does happen. And that is the following. What if you have a couple who's having difficulty having children? So sometimes along the way, there may be a procedure that's done, it's called an IUI, which basically means an insemination, that they'll take some of the zera of the man and they'll insert it manually into the woman's body, and that will increase the chances of becoming pregnant. Again, depending on what the particular issue is in the first place, whether that's even on the radar screen of any help at all, it's obviously going to depend on what the problem is. But this is one of the procedures that's done sometimes when couples having difficulty having children. So there's a twofold question over here. But every once in a while you have a situation where this insemination, the IUI, has to be performed when the woman is still in need. Usually this thing is very, very timed properly. It has to coincide, you know, with the right time in terms of ovulation. The doctors will not necessarily give you an option of saying, well, wait another 3 days until the woman comes back to the mikveh, maybe too late at that point. So sometimes the insemination may have to take place at a time when the woman is actually in need, though. So there is a twofold question here. This question of what is that permissible? You're allowed to perform an insemination when the woman is at surura. That's the question number one. And question number two is, assuming that that's permissible, now she wants to, then she goes to mikveh, she wants to go to mikveh the next 2-3 days. So she's most probably going to be at the tail end of Shiva Nakia when this is happening. But wait a second, she just had zera put into her body. So she has zera put into her body, that means zera is potentially coming out of her body. If zera is coming out of her body, she becomes a paleta. So all of a sudden, now she can't go to the mikveh so fast. Now instead of going to the mikveh, let's say tomorrow night, when she was planning on it, today just got knocked out because of paleta. Tomorrow may be paleta. The next day, paleta. You know, she may have to delay her mikveh trip for another 4 or 5 days. So what is the answer to those two questions? So the question number one, whether it's permissible to do an insemination when the woman's at ease, this is part of a more global question about insemination in general, about whether we consider that to be almost like the equivalent of a Vaisabiyah in terms of Isurim. So Yadua, there was a very famous Machlokes back quite some time ago, dated about 70 years ago, so give or take, between Rav Moshe on the one hand, and there were other Gedolim who disagreed with Rav Moshe. One of the people who were strong against Rav Moshe, the Sakhna Rebbe, but there are others who disagreed with Rav Moshe as well. And basically the question became about how the halacha views, when you do an insemination, is that really like have all the halacha consequences of a maisidia? The original shayla that was presented to Rav Moshe was if you have a woman who she's not becoming pregnant, the issue is a complication with the husband, they want to take zera from another man and insert it through an insemination process into her body. Is that considered to be a twofold shayla? So number one, is that a violation of Eshes Ish? That they're taking zera from Reuven and putting it into Eshes Shimon? That's a question of Eshes Ish. And number two, will that impact on the child who is going to be conceived? Is that the Eri Chashashim Mandaris? So Rav Moshe answered the negative to both of those questions. Rav Moshe held that was not a violation of Eshes Ish. He said that you can't violate Eshes Ish unless you have a Maisavir. The fact that there's a zera of one man and another woman, that itself does not pose a challenge of Los Inov. And in terms of Mamzeira, so even though the couple who are the biological parents, or the lucky parents of this child, even though they're people who can't have Kedushin one to another, so they would have potentially created a Mamzeira, the Maisha held that you can't create Mamzeira without a Maisha Issa. You can't have an action that's mutter and then turn around to the child's Mamzeira. That doesn't exist. It has to be a Bia Issa, and then only then the child's Mamzeira. That was Maisha's famous kula. So Rav Moshe was attacked very, very strongly, both in the legitimate halachic discourse. You can always have the legitimate halachic discourse. Rav Moshe, unfortunately, tragically, was attacked in the illegitimate discourse in illegitimate ways as well. People took it a little bit out of control in terms of there were some very, very nasty things that were going on in the middle of this machlokes. But Rav Moshe stopped his opinion. Again, there were those who disagreed. They disagreed on both counts. Some who held that the child's Yom Shabbos, some who held that at least the minister was doing it, whatever the case may be. Rav Moshe held that, again, this wasn't like a lechatchila situation. Obviously, this is reserved for a very, very unique scenario. Rav Moshe held the Ikaro, that this wouldn't per se be any violation of any of these yisurim. Well, a Rav who was close to Rav Moshe, so told me, and this many, many years later, told me that there was a delegation of Rabbanim who wanted to go to speak to Rav Moshe about this, that they wanted to get him and affect the changes, change the stuff. So they approached one of the golden rabbis at the time, and they asked him, if you go up to Rav Moshe, try to talk to him. So they said, you're wasting your time. He said, because the minute that he starts to talk to you and learn it, he's going to blow you away. So you're not going to be able to hold a candle to Rav Moshe in terms of learning the sugya. So don't even try to think that you're going to be able to disagree with him. So Rav Moshe was Rav Moshe. My stamp of approval. Anyway, whatever case may be. So this was a running mess like this years ago. So now, on a little bit of a softer end of the Shaila, we can carry this over to a question of Nida. It means we're not taking a Zera of somebody else, we have a stranger. We're taking the Zera of the husband himself. So here we want to take the Zera of the husband and implant it into the wife at the time when she's a Nida. So now what's it is? So is that, there's no issue, this issue, or there's no Mamzeris issue. But there's a potential issue of, is this like, almost like a BS Nida, so to speak, and just like a Ben Nida, whatever that means. It's not going to mean too much in terms of pure halacha, but is that considered to be a sense of kind of a violation of his needs to do this? So many, many of the Polskim held that out. The Rav Moshe held by Asia. This is not a problem. So many needs are a problem. So anyone who had Rav Moshe's mindset from 70 years ago was going to be a matter of this. There were some who were weary about this. There were some Polskim who were not so thrilled about this. But within that world of Polskim who weren't so thrilled about this idea, some came up with a very fascinating pshara, something that we would never think of doing. Some suggested it's called Beis Tfilos. Namely, they told the woman to go to the mikveh beforehand. Now, usually what's happening is, just the way the math is, usually this, the basic idea is that you have to do the intimation before she ovulates. So usually the woman ovulates 2 weeks or so before the next period. So if you just do the math, it's going to end up, let's say, approximately day 12, 13, 14, something like that, which you may be at the very, very end of Shemini Kiyum. So some Rabbanim recommended that, let her go to the mikveh first, not that she's going to be muteris. She still has surah to her husband because she hasn't completed counting Shemini Kiyum, but at least she won't be a surah mideraisa. And that's a good thing, that she won't be a surah mideraisa, because again, we said, ruba the times, the women don't really need Shemini Kiyum in her Torah. Most of the time, she's probably just a nida, not a zaba. So she'll go to the mikveh now, she'll do the intimidation, she still has surah to her husband, and then she'll go back to the mikveh 2 days from now.
Who would potentially be violating
it? I don't know. Yes, it's also not clear. The whole thing is not clear. It's very, very unclear. The part of this, the Rebbe's kind of by Eishes Ishmael, because the Torah formulates the Yisr of the Lashon Shechazera. And that was what led him to build on Zera, and about speaks about a Chumash. So here it's much harder to conceive of what exactly this Yisr is. But whatever, there was some Rabbanu who had this suggestion. I don't think this is, in our circles, this is not generally the way that we go in this. So usually when these shadows happen, at least as we try as best you can to schedule it for after she goes to the mikveh. You can't. You have to do it. Mikveh, then I think that's okay to do these kinds of procedures, even when the woman is in either. It's not the greatest for other reasons also. If and when we're able to maneuver together not to be needed at that point, that would be much, much better, because just in terms of logistically, in terms of procuring this, it's much more complicated when the woman is assumed. Mutaras makes life just easier in terms of this, but the nice stuff is not the choice. So the Shaila now was raised, the second half of the Shaila, which is really our Shaila, is that, so how does this impact on Shemini Kiyum? So now she's up to day 5 of Shemini Kiyum, she's going to have her procedures, having Dera put in, so should we say that's like the halakha equivalent of having V at that point, and now she's got to wait 4 days, 5 days, whatever the number of days that's going to be clear of Halezis. So this was a big question. So there are many Polskim who are making the Shaila, because it could be that there really is no Poletus here, per se. The way this procedure goes, I'm not a doctor, but the way this procedure works pretty much is, it's not that they stop taking Zerah, just because Zerah, it's not like that. The Zerah is taken out, and it's taken from the man, and then it's cleaned up in the laboratory, and a lot of the other stuff is removed, and they take the Zerah, mamish, that part that they need, and it's inserted well inside her, and there's no real poletus. The whole model of poletus doesn't really exist. So just because she had zera put in, doesn't mean anything halachically is really going to be coming out. Anything that's put in so far, nothing really is coming out in the Maisa. So there are poskim who make on this legami that hold that this is the chalal, not poletus. It's nothing to do with the sugi poletus altogether. Again, this is a topic that is discussed, and when couples have this kind of issues, they should consult with their rabbi to figure out a lot of issues that go into these IUR procedures. A lot of other halachic issues that have to be dealt with. So in the process of discussing, anyone who has these kind of issues should have to speak to a kabbalah and rabbi. And this is one of the many, many things that has to be worked out. That was just a shirayim of last week, and we'll move on to the next topic. So now a woman already has been up to for X amount of days, and she's waited her 4 days or 5 days, whatever number of magic number she has, until this is over, and now she's ready to start counting Shivinikiyim. Not so fast. Before you start counting Shivinikiyim, the Kishmom Kenu, you have to make sure that Shivinikiyim, you have to make sure the dam has stopped already. How do you know that the dam has stopped? For the last 5 days you've been bleeding, so you have a chazaka that you've been seeing down, you have to change your chazaka. You have to ascertain that the dam has stopped, and now you're ready to begin the next stage of counting Shivinikiyim. So what has to be done in order to ascertain that the chazaka of Riyad dam is over? So this is the Mishnah, the end of Maseches Nida, which happens not to be talking about Shivinikiyim. The Mishnah is talking about the topic. The Mishnah is talking about a Nida Deraisa. The Mishnah is talking about a woman who started to see Dam on Sunday. So we mentioned Shivas Yom Tivin Nelson. Not this expression, the following expression. No, this one. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was thinking that it was Yom Tivin. I got confused. So next expression, this coming week's expression, it says Shivas Yom Tivin Nelson. Now a woman starts seeing Dam on Sunday. So Sunday's day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Shabbat afternoon, the last of the days, and then she goes to the mikveh that night. So the Mishnah says, she goes to the mikveh that night, how do you know she's not bleeding anymore? Maybe she's still not. She's been bleeding for the last 5 days, so make a day since she stopped bleeding. So the Mishnah says you have to do something to prove that the chazaka has changed. So what do you have to do? So the Mishnah speaks about the procedure called a hafrasha b'tahara. So the Mishnah says, Hifrisha B'Tahara. Then the Mishnah has a detailed discussion. When does Hifrisha B'Tahara happen? Good morning, afternoon, all of like, but it has to be Hifrisha B'Tahara. In low Hifrisha B'Tahara, she didn't have that separation B'Tahara, and she didn't determine that the Dhamma stopped, so then she cannot go to the Mishnah that night. That's what's called the Hifrisha B'Tahara. So I have no idea why, but sometime in the last 2,000 years, that phrase has become a Hefsik Tahara. I don't know who was the first one responsible for that change in terms, but the term that the Tanoim used was Hefrosh V'Tahara, the term the Gemara used was Hefrosh V'Tahara, and in 2024, we used the term, if someone would say, did you do a Hefrosh V'Tahara, they wouldn't know what you're talking about, so the word become a Hefsik Tahara, but it's the same thing. So there's a big difference between the Hefsik Tahara that the Mishnah is describing and that we're describing. The Mishnah is discussing a woman who's been bleeding for 6-7 days, she wants to go to the mikveh tonight, so she has to prove that something's fact. That's what's happening today. For our women, we want to prove that the Dhamma stopped so that she can begin to catch her in the Kiyam. It's a different, I mean, hopefully the end game is the same, but it's a very, very different procedure. So we're not trying to ascertain did the Dhamma stop now and we're going to mix it 10 minutes from now. We're trying to ascertain did the Dhamma stop and I want to begin to catch her in the Kiyam. So just that old Mishnah would say it's the exact same thing. The Mishnah didn't talk about it because in the Zman, the early Tanoim, so we need this when he uses it, that was with others. So the Mishnah was talking about Anita, the Mishnah was talking about Shiva Yom Tivit Nelson, all of their Aisha. Whereas with Zman Hazeh, that all the women are now suffering Zavos, so of course you have to do the same thing. It's the same problem, the same concern. So all the Rishonim, Kimat, all the Rishonim write this Pizman in the Edom HaSechet Nida, whatever it says in the Mishnah about a Frosh of Atara, the Nidos, applies for us, the Zavos. And that's unequivocally Shulchan Aruch, that's what we found in, that a woman cannot begin to count the Shivin Akim until she undergoes that procedure as is recorded in the Mishnah at the end of the Sefer Nida. So what is that procedure? So that procedure is a bedika, and she has to check herself. So she takes a bedika book, she has to insert it in that area, and we'll talk about it as we go on, just what exactly that means. She has to go inside and check and move it around and make sure that there's no dam on it. If there's no dam on the bedika cloth, then she can assume the dam, that the bleeding is ended, and once the bleeding is ended, now she's eligible to begin to count the Shivin Akim. So that's the din that appears in the Mishnah vis-a-vis. And the Midos for us is kind of carried over at the beginning of Shivin Akim, the end of Zivos, but the same exact halacha. Where did this halacha come from? It's a Mishnah, we definitely know it's a Mishnah, but where did the Taran get it from? So this is the major machlokes in the Rishonim. So the Taz Rosh on the spot in Masechet Nida has the following suffix. Is this a Din Midarais or is this only a Din Midarabonim? It means Midarais, you have to be Chayshesh, that you can't say with a straight face that Nam is Daf until you know it's Daf, because she has a Chazaka. And it's also this coming week's parasha, the principle of Chazaka. As the Gemara says, the beginning of Masechet Chulin, how do you know that you follow Chazaka? If something used to be the status quo, something last week was such and such, how do I know that I have to assume nothing has changed until I know otherwise? The Gemara says, Apostle, in Parashas Metzorah, by Nigi Batim. Nigi Batim, excuse me, Nigi Batim. So first of all, Nigi Batim, the Gemara says, Lohoyim lo yeh, it never happened. It's just the other Joshua Kabbalah. There are more halachos called Nigi Batim than any other part of Parashas Metzorah. So in Nigi Batim, the Torah describes the following. The Kohen comes to inspect the house. He's about to say Tamei, and then the Torah says, wait, don't say Tamei yet. The Yotza come in a bias. He says, go out of the house. Don't say the magic word Tamei yet. Why? Because if you say Tamei, everything inside the house is going to become Tamei. It doesn't become Tamei until you step outside, until you say the word Tamei. So the Torah says, the Yotza come in a bias. Go outside, and then declare Tamei. So the Gemara has a long discussion. The Gemara says, how do you know the Negus still Tamei? Can you imagine this? One of my many examples of here in the Chassid's reading this Pesukim in Chumash and saying, oh, I get involved, the guy's crying, his nigger tzaras, he's got his house is turning green and red, and the client's looking at him and giving him a mussar, and the guy's crying, and Chassid's saying, Yavisi Pashati, what am I going to do? And the Misnagid's looking at him saying, hold the phone. Mr. Cohen, what gives you the right to say Tommy? So maybe it's a chodik. Maybe the nigger shrunk. Maybe it's still a little more grist the way it was 30 seconds ago. What do you mean? The chazaka was 30 seconds ago. It was a grist. It was the right size. It happens to be just like the only grist about the same size of the kesem. If the nega was a grist 30 seconds ago, the stomach is the same because we stalled chazaka. So all of a sudden, the fight about Sheikh Shmaites are taking place by the nega teras. He must say, that's right. That's the din. The din that rice, you follow chazaka. So comes the Taz Rosh and says, this woman is a cheskes ro adam. So how can you let her go to the mikvah? How can you let her drink cash from the kiyam until that chazaka has been undermined? So you have to do something physically to show the chazaka has changed. So one day in the Taz Rosh is the din of the raisa. And the other day in the Taz Rosh is not really a din of the raisa. It's a din of the rabbana, but the raisa, the stam, the dam, stop already. The drawback to Taisa says, "Gittin is the cheskes raw, really chesuah b'chin the cheskes tirli oylam." Taisa has a liner in the beginning of the sentence. Gittin, Taisa writes that when a woman has a riyas dam, she becomes a cheskes roa. It's not really a chazaka because the chazaka of roa dam is not chazaka that's going to last forever. Taisa says the cheskes tirli oylam. A woman doesn't see dam for the rest of her life. She's down for a couple of days, so that doesn't qualify as a chazaka. It's a very, very lumdish question. Why doesn't that qualify as a chazaka? So she might. To close with my wrist, that it's not a chazaka, it's a chazaka zil ishtanos. A chazaka that's going to change is not called a chazaka. The Sheikh Shmaita spent 20 pages showing that that's not the reason. So he's meant something totally different. So I gotta look at the safer, but if and when it ever comes out, so that's it's in there. So not, I don't say if, when it comes out, Mr. Shem, so yeah, take a look at it. Anyway, but the bottom line is, so that the Rosh and Nida is not sure whether it's a din derais syndrome. There's a deed from the Rambam, the Hilchis, the Kabbalists of the Yerid, the Maisalos about suffering, the Chatas of all suffering, the idea from Rabbah, that the Rabbah holds the real Dinderites, and that this requires the Nefesh Dara is really required in that Torah to embrace the Chazaka. So when with the rice is part of the mitzvah master, so you have absolutely blishim sofek, you have to have the hefek tower. Without hefek tower, we cannot even begin the discussion of counting shemekim. Rabbi Shefanstein made this discussion into a very, very contemporary topic. Usually, you learn this sugya. So if you're learning lumdus, so you learn it as the rush, the rice, and their body, people with chazaka, with shemaitz, and every day. The question is not kamin ladina. My name is from Medina. Where's the right to go? Well, so Moshe writes, it's part of this age-old discussion about, but let's say you have a couple of tafrum, and the labs are retired from Mishpacha. A child is born, so the impact of the child is meaningless in Halacha, because that's not Mamdeiris. The Torah says that the Feiris, even though neither is the Mishpacharis, but this Issa does not create Mamdeiris. But nevertheless, there is a statement in the Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara from Rishon, that's a little bit of pagam, it's a little bit of not so nice. What does that mean? And therefore what? So in terms of pure halacha, it really means nothing. It means there's no stigma, so it's be kalachni and the child, and they're allowed to get married and try. But also because there is something in almost Ayyim a little bit about that this is considered to be a little bit for kind of the child, and there were some who wouldn't marry if the child was a ben amida. So Rabbi Isha writes that he doesn't think that applies with Mahaz, yeah? Because he thinks that even people are not from, so he said the odds are the woman probably was not really a need at the time. Which one we need to tell? What does that mean? So he said, "Rav Moshe, right? Men, women go swimming. So women go to the ocean. Women go to pools. Go to the Naim Shuvah. Maybe Kosh Matar. Women go swimming. So the odds are that Bracha must have made it that since you don't go to the country in the summer, the child was not really a benedita. Because Bracha made it lucky that the child was conceived is not a benedita. Rav Moshe is not bringing Raya." He had this child, a from child, the child became a real Shabbatai mitzvah, the Yishamai, and everything. So you see that the Rosh Hashanah, you see that this child doesn't have anything out there. So Moshe said you can assume that the child is kosher, you don't have to start asking questions, did she go swimming, did she not go swimming? And then Moshe, in the shuvah, Moshe gets a little bit of a tangent, he says that, what do you mean? The woman went to the mikvah, so said, but she didn't catch a benikiyam. So he says, well, she's probably not involved anyway. She's probably only a nida. So they're abundant anyway. But what do you mean? Rosh says, but she didn't have the time. So now one day enters the rosh, and he doesn't have the rest. So everything where Rosh Hashanah is back, it's not really the right. It's not the right. So the woman's probably this girl, this boy, whoever it is, who came from this marriage, is probably not even a bad nida altogether. And don't worry about it. Then Rosh repeats 30 times over that. By the way, it's not a halakhic issue anyway. If it would have been a halakhic issue, we wouldn't have been reading about it. This is just this is good enough to say that this is not a Ben Nida. That's the famous Achuva Ramosha. So in the middle of that Achuva, he makes reference to the Tzad Rosh and the Rambam about whether it's a Tzad Rosh or Raisa and Rambam. The bottom line is you need it, but the Raisa and the Rambam and the Maisa, a woman must, it's absolutely critical that the woman does have Tzad Rosh. The goal of the Hefsek Tahara is to enable her to begin to count the Shuvah Nikiyam. Therefore, it is obvious that the Hefsek Tahara must precede the beginning of the Shuvah Nikiyam. You can't be up to day 3 in the Shuvah Nikiyam. Oh, now's a good time to do Hefsek Tahara. What does that mean? The goal is you have to break the Chazakah first and then begin Shuvah Nikiyam. Therefore, it is obvious that the Hefsek Tahara must take place before the first day of the Shuvah Nikiyam begins. When does the first day of Shuvah Nikiyam begin? It begins halachically when the day begins. So the halachic day begins at Laila. The question is, when is Laila? It's a famous Gemara, the second of Shabbos, that there's a certain time on the clock, on the day, that we're not sure what it is. We're not sure whether it's Yom or whether it's Laila. That's, of course, the period of Ben Hashemashos. This was an age old, we're not going to determine now all the sheets about the Ben Hashemashos. So Machlekes Datara, Machlekes Amorah, Machlekes Yerushalmi, Machlekes Gedolei HaPoskim, Machlekes until Ari is Adachal, until today, which is what exactly the Ben Hashemashos story is all about. But we've said this many times, we generally work with the mindset that once the sun sets, that is already the beginning of Ben Hashemashos. Not everyone agrees to that, but that's generally the practice that we have today. That was the view of the Vilna Gaon, that was the view way before the Vilna Gaon, of the Gaonim and the Rish and the Rambam. There was disagreement with that statement, but this has been pretty much in our communities, in Israel for sure, and just about all communities in America, this is the Chumrah, this has been the accepted view that once the sun sets, that's already the beginning of the next day, at least the suffering being the next day. It's because of that it should be obvious that if you want to make Hefsek Tahara, the Hefsek Tahara has to precede the beginning of the next day. So the first day of Shuvah Nikiyam is going to start, let's say, Shkiyah on 735 tonight, or something, Shkiyah 735 tonight. A woman wants to make Hefsek Tahara, so she has to make Hefsek Tahara before Shkiyah happens. If she makes the Hefsek Tahara after Shkiyah, so then how can you count tomorrow as the first of Shuvah Nikiyam? It's 23 hours and 59 minutes and 22 seconds. Tell her, but you don't know the first 18 seconds. So if you do Hefsek Tahara after Shkiyah, it's going to be a problem. So, notwithstanding what I just said, there are some folks who take a little bit of a different approach to Shkia. There are some Fisher folks who have that we call Shkia doesn't really mean Shkia, following a bit of Tom's view. And even those who are Choshish that ask Shkia, there are Sfakis, and Meislach, and Sfakis, and Moshe, and Ban, and all kinds of different Kunsim. So there are Rabbanim out there, reputable Rabbanim out there, who will be lenient about Hefsek Tahara that are done slightly after Shkia. Very, very slightly, a few minutes after Shkia. There are Rabbanim out there who will be leading about this, and there are other Rabbanim who will not budge on this. So most of the Rabbanim in our communities are from the second group who will not be Megill on Hefsek Tahara after Shkia, even for the smallest amount of time after Shkia. So again, there are other communities, other Rabbanim who have different opinions, but the concern that most of the Rabbanim around here have is that Shkia really means Shkia. Somebody told me once that they asked the Shaila to Rav Nevenfeld. They brought the statue of Nevenfeld, and they asked him, it was done, he said, it was done 45 seconds or so after Shkia. He said, Rav Nachman looked at the person like he landed from the moon. Like, as he was asking, are you allowed to come from Beis Lachish? He didn't understand what he couldn't even fathom what the half meaning of the question was. So Rav Nachman just responded, that was a hashkia. So Rav Nachman said, the Kamadak, he was an American, he was a Shiloh, so he was used to that little, that was a Kamadak Kodachas. So Rav Nachman responded, that was the end of the discussion. They couldn't. They both learned literally a different language. So again, that's pretty much the way we're going to go around here as well. Sometimes you have shilas that come up that they're too close to shkia. They're very, very close. Many times you get a shout out from a woman saying that, and Ryan says, I need your expertise on this. She says, my watch says this, my Thomas Cox says that, his bottom said this, the name of the observatory said this, the Shkia is 7:45 in 2 seconds, or if you're across the street, it's 7:45 in 4 seconds, and then she doesn't remember where she was. Wait a minute. Give me a break. Like, just, sure, those kinds of things should not happen. You have to give yourself a little bit of a
witness.
Told
us one reason why you should have a very accurate clock. You should miss the specific reason. In other words, if you want to argue what time it is, you can negotiate when it is. But
I have no time. Right, keep going all the time. Right, these kinds of shouts. Right. Yeah. Whatever. Anyway, bottom line is get the right clock, and this should not happen. We'll talk a little bit later, maybe next week, about, or whatever next year is going to be, we'll talk about the when time of the day is the optimal time to do against the tower, but I can tell you when the optimal time is, and that's 3 seconds before Shkia. So therefore, it should not happen. There is a child that happens. But a woman sometimes does that shikara, so the whole goal of the shikara is to make sure that she's not bleeding anymore. So she does that shikara, and there's blood on the thicker cloth, so that doesn't sound too good, except she's pretty certain that this dam is not coming from Osamopam. This dam is a dam maka. We spoke a lot about this a couple of months ago. Dam maka is mutter, but the daka is outside the uterus, even a maka inside the uterus can be mutter, depending on what it is exactly. So here we have a situation where she's trying to do Hesek Tara and she has a Maka. How does she know she has a Maka? She feels it, but that's usually not enough. She'll go to a Bildeta, she'll go to a woman who's a midwife, a nurse, somebody's going to examine her and say, you have a Maka. So, therefore what? So we know, we can say with absolute certainty that this dam is coming from the Maka. So comes the Chavazat, the Malin Hasibus, and says, that's wonderful, and as we learned a lot in Tzimikul Pei Zayin a couple of months ago, a woman has a Dam Maka in the middle of a month or something, she has a Dam Maka, as long as we can have the same Dam Maka, do she not see Dam, so we're good to go, we don't have to worry about it. So the Chavazat, that's great. There's a Maka, so we just ignore the Dam that's from the Maka, but she still hasn't done a Hesek Tarah. Says the Chavazat, that until she produces a clean B'din cloth, so we haven't changed her status. So just to ignore, we can ignore a dam and label it as a dam maka, that's when she has a cheskes tahora. So you want to turn a woman into a nida, or she's a milikah, she's a nikiyim, so she already broke the chazak of roa, even though she broke the chazak of tumah, that's already a lovelish word, which is not a cheskes roa anymore. So we say, okay, so we can ignore this dam. But if the dam maka is on the hesek tahora itself, so she's zero. Dam maka doesn't ruin you, it doesn't hurt you, it doesn't help you either. So now she's still a blank. She has yet to prove, she hasn't yet produced a good deep blood. So the Chavadah says that's the problem. If you follow that Chavadah, so you could run into a big, big problem. You could have a woman who has a maka for a long time. I mean, she's it's not going away for the next month. So she has this maka. Every day she's trying another bidik. She's trying another bidik. She can't get a clean as a diary. That's the worst. If she can't even get a clean as a diary. So what do you do under those circumstances? So you have a couple of options what to do. So the more modern option is you can actually go back to the Bildeket and you can actually not do Hesek Tahara with a Dikah cloth, you can do Hesek Tahara with the Bildeket's eyes herself. That means in theory, if the Bildeket looks all around the area and says, I'm checking there's no dam, so then, yeah, that little spot there is dam, but that's, I see the scratch there. So then that is, in a sense, a bidika. In the old days, they didn't always have that option. It wasn't practical to do that. So then, I'm sticking bidika cloth in. what the result is. I see dam comes out. So I made this from another part also. So I haven't made any chazok of it, anything has changed. I have nothing to show. But if the Bodekan is looking proper and seeing, so that's one potential option. So in the olden days, there was another option. That was a suggestion made by the Gedolei Achronim, the Zichron Yosef. Zichron Yosef suggested that you're right, that the woman can't produce Efsek Tahara. It's impossible for her to produce Efsek Tahara in a conventional way of just putting in a big look. But remember, what was the goal of Efsek Tahara? The goal was to prove to us that the dam is stopped. That was really the goal. So Zichron Yosef says, I got another way of proving it to you. Forget about the bigger clothes. I got a brand new way of proving the dam is stopped. This woman, for her last 20 years, has never, ever had a period longer than 8 days maximum. So it just has never happened. So let her wait 9 days, 10 days, 11 days, wait X amount of days, a little bit past when her longest period was. And then we can say with a straight face, there's a ruba, the ruba, the ruba, the ruba, that's a period, that's stop. Ruba chazach rubadif. The ma'adach chazach that you just did a little flimsy dikit klos, and that's what we're willing to say, okay, the chazach is over. If she's proven to us, based on her own history, that she never sees dam past this point, so we know for a fact that the dam has stopped. If the dam is stopped, then she's eligible. She may have lost an extra day or two before she's able to make that assessment, but if she's able to do that, so then so be it. That would potentially be a new beginning.
She never needed
one. Comes to the judgment and says that maybe, Chinami, that the men who need a siktara, the woman doesn't want to wait till day 9 to start a siktara. She wants to, she's got to ride day 6. But if a woman, for whatever reason, there's nobody close around, she has no way to do bedikas, she wants to wait it out. So maybe the waiting it out would be good enough. So this opens up a major, major machlokes about, is that correct? Here we have a Mishnah, we have a Rishonim, we have a Shulchan Aruch. Everyone's talking about taking a bedikas cloth, putting it inside, and checking, and that's what they're there. And that comes to the Chiddush and says, I have a new way of doing it. If it accomplishes the same goal, or be without it, will be a goal. So does that work? Does that work? So one can just imagine that was a loaded machlokes. So we'll try to pick this up a little bit next time as to how this plays out for us, this potential application of this Zichron Yosef, and what this means for us in terms of just analysis of what Efsek Tahara is and what it's not. Okay.